House Committee on Human Services on today, Wednesday, February 15th, and we're having an informational hearing on an update on House Bill 2856 from the 2011 session, and Jim Scherzinger. Thanks for coming, Jim, and it's always good to see you.
Co-Chair Tomei, Co-Chair Gilliam, and members of the committee. I'm Jim Scherzinger from the Department of Human Services. I'm the Chief Operating Officer, and I'm here to talk today about 2856, which was House Bill 2856 that passed in 2011. And the bill, quite simply, just says, requires DHS to work with other agencies to reduce administrative burdens on providers. I think that's the easiest way to say it. And it's really broadly written. It really doesn't require us to do anything that we don't want to do anyway, since we started down the transformation road about 4 or 5 years ago. But nonetheless, I think it's good to come back and talk about what we're doing and to make the report that ultimately we'll have to make to the next regular session.
Jim, I'm going to interrupt you just for a minute because I think people may remember that last session we had lots of testimony from different people from the agencies and from the private nonprofits. Representative Nathanson, I think she was chief sponsor of the bill. And so we were hearing from people they had to do duplicate reports, and so what we were trying to do was to limit that.
Right.
So just to remind folks what this was all about.
So what I wanted to do then was to talk about three things, and one was, I think, specifically, although the bill was written really broadly, there was a lot of testimony from some particular providers, behavioral rehabilitation services providers, though they weren't really listed in the bill, there was a lot of testimony. And so I want to talk about what we're doing in that specific case and the work we're doing with those providers. That's one thing. And then secondly, some of the other things that we're doing, especially with the State County Government Efficiency Task Force that Representative Nathanson is chairing. And then thirdly, a bit about what DHS is doing with transformation itself, especially those things that relate to the efficiencies that are contemplated by the bill. So those are the three things. And I do have, if we need more detail, I'm not an expert on the behavioral rehabilitation services, but we have people in the room that can talk about that if you need to talk about that some more. But anyway, we do have units in the department that have been working with the Oregon Health Authority and the Oregon Youth Authority to create some efficiencies about the way we regulate these private child caring agencies that we also contract with to provide residential treatment services. We license about 240 of these agencies. We contract with about 30 of them, and the Youth Authority, 23 of them, and some of them both. We both contract with. So we've had a work group that's been working with that group to try to create some efficiencies around the way we do that. And the kind of things that they've accomplished so far are conducting joint reviews from OIA and DHS, revising contract language to be sure that the contract language is consistent for the same type of service. The OIA and DHS have agreed to accept the BRS status conferred by the other agency, ensuring that corrective actions that are required are joint between the two agencies, coordinating things like fire marshal and sanitation inspections, and then establishing a protocol for making suggestions, efficiency suggestions. They've also are pursuing a list of other potential efficiencies And this is an ongoing work group that's been, I think it meets formally quarterly. And this is the kind of thing they're working on now. Determining areas of overlap with accreditation standards to determine if you can eliminate some regulations, if those things are covered by accreditation. Reviewing the background check processes to see if you can eliminate duplication. Merging assessment information into one document that are shared between the agencies. Actually looking at an electronic tool that they can use to write reports and measure utilization consistently. So that's a really high-level version of the work that group is doing. And I actually have a status report, the latest status report, and somebody in the room, if you would like to know more about what they're doing. And I think that's the most of the testimony you got was really around those providers at the last session. So I don't know if you have any questions about that.
Representative Dickinson. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you very much for the report. And you're right. It was fairly broad at the department's request.
Right.
To make sure that it covered all the things you would want to tackle. But we were very specifically concerned about the audits. Duplicate audits. In your description of what you're considering or working on now, the third item was related to documentation, and I didn't catch it, but you did mention it very briefly. Is there some work done that will result in reducing the number of redundant and unnecessary audits, because we had a great deal of testimony about how many times a year and how many staff are devoted by these organizations to responding to, and not just audits, but reports, filling out reports.
Right.
You mentioned one agency may be willing to accept the, or one division's accept the report of someone else. But when they have to respond multiple times a year to information, much of which is similar, but you have to submit it in a different format, they spend literally hours and hours a year. So is that part of what's being addressed in third item?
Well, I believe that's true. Do you have any more specifics about that? Yeah, come on.
Thanks for coming.
Co-Chair Tomei, Co-Chair Gilliam. I'm Donna Keddie, and I'm the Administrator of the Office of Licensing and Regulatory Oversight for Department of Human Services, formerly the Manager of Residential Treatment and Licensing in the KIDS programs. And so at the time that I was directly involved in this work, we did all of the things, and more since I've left, regarding what Jim mentioned. And many of the things he mentioned are specific to the consolidation of reports. For example, in the psychiatric residential facilities, we, at the time of an incident, we have combined the actual response as a joint response, and we have initiated one report at the summation of that investigation, so that the corrective action plan that they receive is one plan with one set of actions that isn't contradictory and that we all sign off on. So that's an example of one type of consolidation of reports. Site reports are done jointly with the youth authority. So we've made significant progress in a variety of areas.
It would be really helpful to me if I could see something on paper, if you would show us how you've dealt with some of the redundancies, et cetera. Not today, of course, but if you could send us something in the next few weeks, that would be great, so that we can see some progress on this.
We could certainly do that.
Yeah.
Yep, for the question, Representative Nathanson.
Can I have a brief follow-up? Thank you. All of the stuff you've described sounds very positive, and I appreciate that work. I've been getting calls over the last few months from providers saying we're not seeing any difference at all in anything yet. And I think much of the concern has to do with these annual-type reports that they still are subject to filling out over and over and over again. And to what value? You've talked about incident reports and some very specific kind of reports, but what about all these annual things that, you know, someone may just be filling out the same kind of information for several different areas in DHS plus OIA plus OHA, and they're these just sort of routine, regular, annual things. Is that going to be addressed soon?
Co-chairs Gilliam and Tomei, Representative Nathanson, to the extent that there's overlap between the Department of Human Services licensing, the Oregon Youth Authority licensing, and the Oregon Health Authority licensing, where we're all going into the same facility, that is the focus and accomplishment that we've made. What I think the providers are subjected to is a whole variety of site visits and inspections by folks that they have business relationships with that possibly don't involve the department. So in examples that we've gotten in the past where a provider would say that they've had, you know, 15 different people come into their facility and do a site visit and then present a report, it may be that, you know, 13 of them were, and this is not based on anything factual, but 13 of them may have been that they had a contract with another entity, or they were reviewed for food, I'm losing the thought, but some other program of state government outside of the Department of Human Services where that actual licensing overlap doesn't exist.
Well, the bill asked DHS to work with all other agencies to find ways to reduce the burden. You have mentioned two, OHA and OIA, but to the extent that counties and other state agencies are involved, I hope you continue to broaden the efforts and find ways for everyone to get on board. And just as you mentioned, agreeing to accept status conferred by other agencies or sign off on corrective actions jointly, I think that's an example of opportunities on these other kinds of site visits and annual reports. Let's all get on board. We want the same thing, the safety of the children, the safety of the seniors, the safety of whoever's being served by that particular organization. Everyone wants the same objective. Why do we have to have seven ways to ask only three different questions and then do it every year, year after year? That was the point. Thank you,
Representative. Representative Thompson.
A couple of questions, Madam Chair. One of the, to kind of echo what Representative Nathanson is saying, one of the common complaints I get about agencies, not just yours, is from consumers of all sizes, is that there is a redundancy, overreaching in some cases, and just a lack of understanding why they're being asked to do things they're doing that they just did 2 months ago and whatnot. Isn't there any way that these people can, I'm assuming you want to improve, why isn't there a way these people can go directly into the agency with their concerns and inquiries and not end up totally frustrated in my office that there's nobody that seems to be responsive or interested in what they're doing? Seems like you should have a portal for those people you're working with to solicit suggestions for improvement. And I know that's a double-edged sword. They're not all going to be working. But the frustration I seem to sense in the people I end up working with, and I have to go to the agencies, is they've tried or no one will respond to them. And what they're complaining about in a lot of cases to me even seems really dumb.
Co-Chair Tomei, Co-Chair Gilliam, Representative Thompson. You know, at least in the realm that we've been working on this with licensing, the BRS programs, Oregon Youth Authority and Oregon Health Authority, and that overlap, we have developed what I think in part, will respond to what you're suggesting, and that is a protocol for soliciting from providers what they believe the important efficiencies are that we could work on together. So there's a protocol that's been drafted, and it is before the Oregon Alliance of Children's Programs right now, and we're kind of awaiting their response to that. It would provide a vehicle for letting us know what's important to them to create further efficiency. It is isolated to that particular group of providers, but I think it's a good question.
So Co-Chair Tomei and Co-Chair Gilliam and Representative Thompson, I think part of the issue is, because I think your question was more broad than just this one program or set of programs, is it's really a cultural thing, and the culture has to be changed, and that's it's how the organization responds to that kind of information coming or stimulus from the outside. And I think, first of all, our director has made it very clear that the culture has to change. That's part, and I was going to talk a little bit about the, and I think Aaron has talked to some extent here about the management system that we're putting in, and that's the goal of that, is to create real strong outcome measures and hold people accountable to them, as well as the process measures that we use to achieve them. And it really takes the culture change to get an organization to respond to those, because an organization like ours gets hit with lots of suggestions all the time, and you need to have an effective way to really bring them in and prioritize them and get them in the right place, and that's a culture change for us. There's no doubt about it.
Second question, which kind of probably you hit it on the culture change.
Yeah.
In two instances, not in your agency, thank God, I recently interacted with, I traced the complaint from coming in from people who had to fill out these reports. And what I found in the agencies was these reports go into a file cabinet, never to be looked at again. They aren't tabulated, they aren't referenced, they aren't anything. And in one case, it's a four-drawer revolving file cabinet. You dump the bottom drawer and move it to this empty drawer at the top for the incoming reports, and they just keep moving down. It's like, why are we doing this? If no one, analyzes the reports, no one cross-references anything, no one asks for that information, but we have people collecting reports and putting them in file cabinets. It's a waste, a colossal waste of time on everybody's part, and it might be culture, but I that would be a question I'd like to see answered across the board. If I'm submitting a report to the state, what happens to the report? Am I doing it because there's a regulation, or am I doing it because the information is tabulated and sent to the federal government, or am I doing it because somebody told me I'm going to do it and they don't know why I'm doing it? That was a statement and a question.
Right.
We just thought it was a rant.
Yeah, that's right. I do those all the time. I take full responsibility for rants. But there is frustration out there that we're not doing it right.
And I know we share the frustration because it creates work for us as well. And sometimes, a lot of times, it's recognizing that you don't want to throw anything away because somebody's going to audit it at some point, and not being very mindful about or careful about what we have to save and what we don't have to save, and what we really need to. We don't sometimes keep the right information or gather the right information, and the auditors yell at us for that. And then sometimes sometimes the audit requirements are just not the best. So I mean, there's all kinds of reasons when you really drill down, and that's why I say it's a culture change, that you have to get the culture to change in order for the organization to respond appropriately. It can't come from one person wanting to do it right.
Representative, I've got a couple of people before you.
Okay.
Acknowledging that I saw you.
Thank you.
I think, Jim, what we're hoping to see, we know that it's like turning the Titanic, but I guess we're wanting to see some changes along the way, and we will be dealing with it again in the next legislative session, but we have lots more questions, I think, for you. Representative Mr. Kocher.
Thank you, Madam Chair. At first, I thought you were criticizing my constituent inquiry cabinet, but apparently not. My question is about the work group mentioned in the bill, and I'm glad that Representative Nathanson is with us as author. If I missed your reference to it, I apologize. Where are we on the work group to say a little bit about what its progress is? Please.
Oh, I see. Co-Chair Tomei, Co-Chair Gilliam, members of the committee, I would say that it's really been subsumed into the work, the continuous improvement work that we do, and I have to admit, we have not sat down and specifically appointed one goes to this bill. This is what we have done is within the development of the management system, we've identified as one of the primary outcome measures the building partnerships with our customers and our providers, and then developed a set of metrics around what about how we measure that, and that's been subsumed within the management system that we've created. And we've assigned owners to those outcome measures, and we have a quarterly reporting system to come back and talk about how well we're doing. And it wasn't focused specifically on this bill. It was focused on trying to fit within the overall priorities of making it a strong priority within the organization. And then we've developed a set of what we call the breakthrough strategies that would focus around those metrics. And so I think sounds like I need to do is to go back and to take that work and just put it in a specific focus on that particular language.
Follow up?
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, and the main thing is, are we getting at the intent of the bill? So I'm not trying to cross T's and dot I's for no reason, but it might be a good conversation particularly to have with our good representative on, if that's happening, maybe there is a way to fulfill the requirement of the bill on the work group without making a lot of extra work, but I think we want to take a closer look at that.
It wouldn't be a problem to convert it into
and
that.
She may want to comment on that. My last question, Madam Chair, is just a little bit shift of gears here, and I'm not asking you to go in depth or to talk about something that we don't have time for, but given the fact that this committee has done some work and moved the Early Learning Council bill on, I'm wondering, do you anticipate major changes coming in how we coordinate some of this streamlining and so forth that we're talking about in the shadow of that bill coming? I don't mean that in a negative way. In the anticipation of that bill coming.
So major changes that result from in efficiency changes from that particular bill?
Because it seems to me that bill
will
affect many of the vendors and programs that you're speaking about. I mean, it's a huge, if somebody can correct me, I think there's big overlap between what Early Learning Council is suggesting in that bill, it's now in Ways and Means, is that where we sent it, and what you're doing in efficiencies here. If you haven't thought about that, all I guess I'm saying is you probably need to. I'd get ready and maybe take a look at what that.
I do not believe we've that certainly I haven't thought as much about the process implications of that as opposed to the policy implications of that. So we will take a look at that.
Representative Widener.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm going to go back to the culture aspect of where we were. When trying to change culture, and I know I've been there and done this lots of different times, when people are set in their ways of doing things one way and getting them to change can be tough at times. Do you find the problem exists more with middle management on changing their culture and how they interact with the frontline people to bring forward the changes that you need to make, or do you find it more with frontline people where the cultural problem is?
So co-chairs Tomei and co-chair and Representative Widener, members of the committee. What I find is that it's really more about the structures and the incentives that we've created. That organizations like ours were set up more to be reactive to, let's say, to what I call being program-driven. They react to what the legislature decides to do rather than be proactive about achieving the goal that they have, that they've been given by the legislature. And so they're not encouraged to take in information and use it in a proactive way to solve the problem. Instead, they're put in a position where all the rewards are to simply react and to sort of buffer whatever stimulus comes to them, and to rely on anything that gets them to act to come from somewhere else, from above. And I think that, I don't know that it's so much people don't want to change. I think, in fact, with the surveys that we did when McKinsey came out, the original surveys we did of our staff of whether they wanted to change or not, we would, and we've brought them in other groups before and showed them, people want to change. They don't like the way the organization is, and especially the frontline workers. Most of our frontline workers are people who really are working for government because they agree with what we're trying to do, and they want to achieve something, and they're not happy with the system the way it is. And so I really believe that it's the system that holds people back. And yes, I think in sometimes in middle managers, they've learned to operate in certain ways, and you might get more resistance there because they think they expect you to operate in a different way, and you have to really be able to communicate that you don't want them to operate that way anymore in order for that to change. But I really do believe it's the system and not the people. In fact, that's what all of the people that we've had in to help us with this, and many of whom have come from the private sector and working with private businesses, will say exactly the same thing. It's not the people, it's the system. And you have to change the system. And you have to create a different set of incentives and you have to invest in training and you have to be sure that it's safe for people to act on. To act based on their own judgment, and that's the problem. It's not. It really isn't the people. And people will select themselves out if they don't like it.
An interesting take on that, okay. Representative Greenlick.
Thank you. Hi, Jim. I wonder if it's also another issue that's involved in this. I do remember the original reports of the McKinsey process and how under-resourced you were. I remember an experience when I was an executive at Kaiser Permanente in the dark old days when there weren't any appointments available. And the membership services, who had to respond to complaints about it, became completely dysfunctional because they didn't have anything to give the people who were complaining about having to wait 8 weeks for an appointment. because there just weren't any appointments. And it seems to me when the people are so stressed because there aren't enough resources to do what they need to do, that it is possible to stonewall, to simply, if you don't have an answer to those complaints, why try and answer it? Put it in a file cabinet and hope it goes away. So I was hoping that as the McKenzie process, as the reorganization, whatever you call it, begins to make more resources available in a variety of ways, including taking away things that don't need to be done, whether that isn't the opportunity to change the culture, because there is the ability to do something differently.
So, co-chairs and Representative Greenlee, the McKenzie process essentially was a recommendation on initiatives to take, particular things that we should do that could create better outcomes or efficiencies. It would create capacity in the organization.
Exactly.
That you could either reduce the budget and take it as savings, or you could increase the outcomes that you were trying to achieve. And of those, there were 9 major ones that were, I think, over like 75% or 80% of the impact. And we're pursuing between OHA, because remember that was OHA and DHS. Between OHA and DHS, we're pursuing 8 of the 9. The 9th one was actually a tax increase. We're not pursuing that one, but we are pursuing the other ones, and they are specific initiatives. They are specific things that we could do to make things, I guess, more efficient or produce better outcomes. They're not really the management system that drives culture change. So you need them both. One of them is modernization. The automation of eligibility was one of their major proposals. And modernization is a combination of a computer system and a lot of business process changes. And so you need both. You need to, we have very inefficient systems, IT systems in state government, but just fixing those systems doesn't get you more efficiency, but not all that you need to get. It's business process change as well. And so our modernization project is going to be a huge driver toward that kind of change. So I think you could say you're right about the McKenzie proposal, but just doing that proposal by itself won't get you there. You have to have management change and culture change at the same time to drive it. It's the combination of the two. And I think our experience with all of the private sector people, not I shouldn't say all because there hasn't been that many of them, but of those people that we have had come in to help us, they're often very good at the kinds of things that McKenzie was good at, but they don't really fully understand the need to drive the culture change in government. It's just a higher bar than it typically is in the private sector.
And if I could follow, all I was pointing out was that more resources is a necessary but not sufficient condition to get the changes. I think that's what you were just saying.
There are places where we need more resources even with efficiency changes, and that's what they concluded. You're right. But that's not enough to get where you want to go.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Yeah.
You're welcome, Representative. Representative Nathanson, do you have any last questions, sir? Okay. It seems to me that what we're talking about in the transformation process is a huge process, and what we're looking at is just a small piece of that process. It sort of reflects the efficiency of the whole process. So if you can help us measure that and assess that, how that efficiency is working, that would be really helpful to us.
Okay, co-chairs and members of the committee, just a little on that. We talked about both ends of it and didn't talk much about the middle. And so there are other things we're doing that you might call in the middle. And so we can talk some more about that when the time comes. We're, for example, working with Representative Nathanson's committee to look at further efficiency changes, and there are some that we are really interested in through that venue. And just some of the restructuring that we're doing within the department that's part of the management system. Aaron just announced that we're now combining all of our licensing and certification functions into one office, and our, as well as our investigatory functions into one office, beginning in April 1st, I believe, is the effective date. And that by itself is going to create common formats across our agency and how we do those sorts of things. And so that's one thing that came out of the management system. After we went through all this work on the management system and outlined our processes, we said, well, we're not organized right in order to achieve our goals. And so she's restructured the organization to really create accountable programs where you have a leader in charge of each program is accountable for that result, and took our support functions like licensing out and consolidated them into an accountable person who could get common formats across the agency. So just that restructuring alone is going to create some of the efficiencies that we want to get. And that's part of, that's where you're combining the culture change with the sort of more process work and system change is creating that accountability around achieving a given outcome. And that's how you combine the two.
Thank you so much. I would like for us to continue on this during the interim and follow up on, to see how things are going. And if you could bring us maybe somebody from a program that is really doing the kinds of things that we're interested in seeing, that would be helpful to us. And what I'd also suggest is that when we hear from constituents or programs that are still having problems, if we can bring them to committee and maybe we can present them to them. So can there be a better efficiency here? I'd like us to stay intimately involved with this issue because we heard a lot of concerns about it during the last legislative session.
I would be very happy if you referred anything you got to me as well.
Sure.
That doesn't guarantee that I'm going to solve that particular problem. But.
And what I'd like is for you to go through our staff administrator. Yeah. That would be really helpful. Thank you both so much. Thank you for coming. Is there anyone else here to talk on this issue?
I realize there was a confusion.
Right. Thank you. With that, we will close the informational hearing on House Bill 2856. And we'll open up the update on Senate Bill 5530. Thank you, Bill, for coming.
I would prefer those inquiries go through Representative Hansen's office.
That would work.
Good afternoon, Representative Co-Chair Comey and Representative Co-Chair Gilliam, members of the committee. My name is Bill Coulomb. I'm the Budget Director for the Oregon Health Authority. Been asked to give you a brief update on the implementation of Senate Bill 5530 from the 2011 regular session. Very briefly, you're familiar, of course, is that the fees that are associated with 5530 are those fees that the programs have changed through their administrative rule process, otherwise known as the Senate Bill 333 process. These are submitted to DAS on an interim basis with the expectation that they're brought before the full assembly to be sanctioned for those fees to carry forward into the next biennium's budget. In the enrolled bill of Senate Bill 5530, there were six public health programs listed in this bill. Oregon Medical Marijuana Program, Emergency Medical Services for EMTs, Lead Paint Renovation, Drinking Water Program for Sanitary Surveys, Radiation Protection, focusing on material licensing, and the Center for Health Statistics, otherwise known as Vital Records, for issuing a stillborn birth certificate. Each of these fee proposals went through the Senate Bill 333 process during the interim of the 09-11 biennium. The OMMP fees, and I'll expand more on that later after I get through the entire list, their fees were implemented effective October 1st of 2011.
And if you could use words and not the acronyms, that would be helpful to us.
Absolutely.
Pardon me.
Yes, the Emergency Medical Services fee and Oregon Medical Marijuana Program. The Emergency Medical Service fees were basically staged in three increments, and the first year that went into effect of July 2010. Again, with that fee, there was stakeholder involvement and support. The stakeholders specifically asked the program to stage those fee increases so that they, as local entities and such, could budget for those proposed increases. In the lead-based paint program, this is dealing with the renovation and removal of lead-based paint and the certification process. That fee proposal went into effect May 1st, 2011. And again, stakeholder involvement with no problem. The drinking water program adopted one fee increase that dealt with the sanitary survey. And this effectively was specifically addressing the drinking water suppliers that basically supply water to systems rather than drinking water systems that actually deal with individual households. And there were only three entities statewide that are actually affected by that fee. And those have also gone into effect of April of 2010. The Radiation Protection Services Program, again, increased fees for radioactive material licensing, and those fees went into effect of September 2010. The Center for Health Statistics and Vital Records implemented their fee for issuing a stillborn certificate on February 3rd of 2010 as well. All of these programs' revenue is on track with the expenditures that were built into the budget. They're on track for the 11-13, just as the program had projected them. Within the Oregon Medical Marijuana Program, I want to come back to briefly, and that is that in Senate Bill 5530, that one specifically dealt with a replacement card issuance, proposed fee of $10. However, when we were in our Ways and Means work session under Senate Bill 5529, our full budget bill, the Medical Marijuana Program was instructed to adopt a whole schedule of new fees for revenues that was then used to support other programs of the Public Health Division.
I'd like to ask a question on that. I just heard from a constituent, and we heard from him by phone, so I would like to have something in writing. We did ask for that, but I will try to repeat what I think his concern was, that you have to reapply for a card. You can't reapply until 30 days before the time has expired, and it may take 60 to 90 days to get that application approved. So his point, as I understood it, was there will be a period in there when he does not have the approval of his card, and he could be in danger of being arrested, et cetera, for being illegal possession of marijuana.
Chair Tomei, members of the committee, I don't know the explicit details of how the program actually works as far as their fee renewal. I can certainly get more information back to the committee. My understanding, though, from having worked in public health many years, is that the program does put the information available into what's called LEDS, the Law Enforcement Data System, if, in the event, someone were to be stopped without having an actual card. I believe, I will double check on this, but I believe there is the process by which a law enforcement staff person can actually check to see if they have been entered into the system. They may not simply have an updated card in their possession.
Right, and I think that was his concern. And will we get something in writing from him? I will contact you and make sure that we can work this out.
Thank you.
Any questions here? Yes, Representative Greenlick.
Well, this was a 2011 bill that we're talking about, right? Is this 5530?
Yes.
Most of the things you were talking about happened in 2010. I mean, is it? I'm not sure I understand how that's an answer to the question of the implementation of the 2011 bill. Could you help me on that?
Okay. Chair Tomei, Representative Greenlick, members of the committee. On the Senate Bill 333 process, you have fees that programs will propose to be adjusted during an interim process. So these fees that particularly affect the public health programs were fees that they proposed to DAS that was during the interim of the 09-11 biennium. Therefore, with the DAS approval, that fee would simply go forward to June 2011, and then it would expire, unless otherwise sanctioned by the full assembly during the 2011 biennium. And that's why always during during the full assembly, there's usually what I would refer to as an omnibus fee bill that DAS presents on behalf of agencies that says, these are the fees that we internally approved. We need your approval for these to continue forward. Otherwise, programs have to make reductions.
If I may follow, but...
Follow up?
But this bill said those, in 2011, talked about those six specific fees, right? It did something about those. What happened after that bill passed is the question, to meet the criteria that were put forth in the bill. So it has to be something that happened after 2011.
Representative Tomei, Representative Greenlick, I believe that the way the process works is that when the fees are sanctioned as part of the 2011 legislation, then the fees are established at that new level, and then that's what the agent, that's what the programs continue to charge. They don't do anything else with it.
So
it basically becomes enabling legislation that allows them to charge that new
fee.
So
it's the same, right, fee that was established in 2010?
I thought I remembered some issues with those particular fees, particularly the water and the emergency medical, in the 2011 session that gave you some other things to happen after 2011, I thought. But maybe I'm misremembering that. There was that huge water fee and that huge emergency medical fee. And there were some issues with it in 5530 that gave you some obligation forward, I think, is what I... Does anybody else remember that? I mean, why are
you
we
were,
here?
You were on Ways and Means, Representative. Yeah. I think you remember it better than we do.
There was that big fight over those bills. So something went into 5530 about them, I thought.
Representative Tomei, Representative Greenlick, I'm not aware that there was any problem with the fees being adopted. Again, the program has the expectation. They establish a rule advisory committee. They're supposed to have stakeholder engagement and support for the fees going forward. Again, like I said, with drinking water, there was just a single line item. It was a sanitary survey for large water suppliers. So it virtually didn't affect 99.9% of the fee payers within the drinking water program. And with EMS, again, they had support of the stakeholders with which to stage the fee increases over a three-year period. But I can certainly ask the programs to investigate if there was any ongoing dialogue.
Why is the update is in front of us today? There must have been something.
Well, because it was a budget note and it said we should have an update. So I'm as puzzled as you are, Representative Greenlick. I'd assumed that we would find out what had happened since the bill was passed in May 13th of 11. So I don't know. And it sounds like maybe we should take
budget
this to Ways and Means. Pardon?
Budget not fulfilled.
Well, not by saying what happened in 2010, it isn't. I mean, there was a real question about the EMS and the water thing. And there was some reluctance to go forward. That's what brought the budget note up.
It seems like it's yeah. Make work, doesn't it? It's sort of what Representative Thompson was talking about, a report that goes into some file and is meaningless, I think, to you and to us.
Representative Tomei, Representative Greenlick, again, I apologize if this isn't the intent of the information you needed. Again, the update that I can give you is that since the date of the legislation, the programs have continued with those fees that had been internally established. They're continuing to operate with those and keeping their stakeholders informed. But
so when you say, is it changing incrementally? So the fee that was established, for instance, in April for water, April 2010, has changed incrementally since then?
Representative Tomei, members of the committee, no. It has only changed from what it was prior to the last biennium to that new level, and then that's where it remains.
But the new level, the change happened in 2010, not in 2011, right?
Correct. That is correct.
Well, I'm totally confused. But I thank you, Bill. I appreciate you coming. I hope we didn't waste your time or ours.
Madam Chair,
yes.
If you'd like to get rid of the well drilling fee, I'd be more than happy to vote on that today.
Any other questions of Bill? Okay, thank you for coming. And I think
Madam Co-Chair.
Representative Greenlick, is this something we should follow up with the Ways and Means Committee?
Yeah, let me see.
I'll do that.
Okay, thank you. Okay, so, thank you so much, and we'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 5530. So, colleagues, we do have a meeting Monday. No, yes, we do. So, you're going to talk about that.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I told you we should have had that last hearing. But, colleagues, you'll remember that in the last session we had quite an interesting meeting on particularly nonprofits and private sector folks providing human services. And the speakers have admonished us not to waste our committee time now that we have first chamber bills out, and we don't have a lot of Senate bills heading our way. So my suggestion would be, if you're interested, is to have another one of those hearings on Monday. It doesn't give you a lot of time, but we would love to have your participation in inviting folks that you think would be interesting. It could be simply groups that you know of that could be in your district or statewide, sort of what works in these times, as we all hear the stories of difficulty with human services. Who's providing services, and how can we learn from them, how can we partner with them, and how can we encourage them? So it could be from any sector, and it could be any sort of service for any group. Do you all remember that meeting?
Mm-hmm.
Then I will suggest, I will solicit your, I'll follow up with you, but if you have some suggestions of people that you would either be willing to invite, or I could invite, the co-chair could invite for Monday, we'd appreciate it.
Great. Okay, with that, we will close the House Committee on Human Services.